And it is true that you become much more productive doing that.
Power to Live More with Joe Dodds.
Welcome to the Power to Live More podcast, all about productivity, organisation, well-being, energy and resilience. I'm Jo Dodds and I started this show to enable interesting people to share their stories about how they use their power to live more, and by that I mean to do the stuff that they want to do more than the stuff that they need to or should do. It's about creating a life for yourself where you have the energy, health and space to be happy and fulfilled, spending your time as you'd like, whether that be at work, home or somewhere else entirely. That's your choice.
Hello. My name is Ellie Dodds and I'm co-presenter, and today Jo's interviewing Jackie Handy of Runway Global. Jackie was introduced to us by Helena Holrick from show number 167. Jackie has supported hundreds of individuals in organisations around the world in accelerating performance. She's a TEDx and event speaker, training consultant and author. Through her personal and professional experience, Jackie has developed a deeper understanding of human behaviour and why we do what we do, as well as how accepting or challenging we are about the behaviour of others. Jackie believes that inclusion can be simple if we all commit to taking small behavioural steps consistently, and that when we all do a little, the world can change a lot. Back to the studio.
Today I'm interviewing Jackie Handy of Runway Global. Welcome Jackie, thanks for joining me.
Hi Jo, it's great to be here, thank you.
Yeah, so tell me a bit first about who you are, what you do and where you do it.
Gosh, right, so who am I? I work with leaders in organisations. I'm a training consultant, I'm a professional speaker, and I'm an author actually as well. And basically what I do is I work in training soft skills, leadership skills in organisations. My background is I used to be a recruiter, a recruitment consultant, so that was my in, if you like, to the training world. I started doing recruitment training, then moved into leadership development, and then I started my own business, Runway Global, 6.5 years ago. And there's a story to it.
Good,
that's what we want. But the story is that I'd gone into learning and development, and I think actually it was really interesting because I went into that field at around about 38. I never would consider myself particularly academic at school. And so I was one of these kids that, you know, just wanted to get out of school and earn a living. And then when I moved into learning and development, around about 38, I thought, God, I really want to learn more things. And I approached learning quite head on, actually. I got involved in neurolinguistic programming, not just involved, but I became a master practitioner and trainer of NLP. I got involved in things like Myers-Briggs type indicator, became a certified practitioner there, and everything disc practitioner. I mean, it just goes on and on, really. a Lego serious play facilitator. Moving into the arena of learning and development actually kind of was the catalyst for me wanting to learn more. So, and I love human behavior and why we do what we do. And I think the reason behind that is just 2.5 years ago, I got introduced to what you might have heard of, the Professional Speaking Association, the PSA. Mm-hmm. And that's an organisation for new and established speakers and speaking professionals. So whether you're a trainer, coach, etc. And I started to practice speaking on stage, obviously to a wider audience rather than facilitating a training session, for instance. And I started telling my own story. And my own story, my personal story, is that I was bullied growing up because of a number of differences that I had. The first of which, I was very young. I was about 4. I had a lazy eye, which meant my left eye turned inwards. I looked different from all the other kids in my street. And basically, I didn't really realize I was different until they pointed it out. And and so I had this whole kind of outsider, you know, I'd been in the in crowd, as it were, and I became an outsider and I was bullied and laughed at and pointed at and so on and so forth. And then thankfully that got rectified. You know, I had an operation to correct the squint in the eye, and I was back in the in crowd again until I was around 14, 15. And, you know, that time in a teenager's life, everything's changing, hormones are kicking in. And I realized that I wasn't like the other girls in my class because I didn't like boys like they did. And I realized and finally admitted to myself that I was gay. And I told a couple of people in the school about it, as teenagers do. They talk, not maliciously, but words soon got round, and I suddenly ended up in the, you know, at the outsider again. So the bullying happened again. And this is the story. I mean, there's much more to it, but this is the story that I started to share on the stage. And because of that, if you like, I managed to get lots of opportunities to speak in different areas. And in September 2018, I delivered a talk on the TEDx stage. My talk's called The Exclusive Nature of Inclusion, where I shared that story in a little more detail. And suddenly I started to get contacted about doing diversity and inclusion work in organizations alongside their leadership development programs. And so all of a sudden, I say all of a sudden, it's funny, isn't it? You work for 30 years and all of a sudden you think you've had a lucky break. But actually, we all know that, you know, everything that you've done and spent your time becoming an expert in over the years suddenly comes together. And I think that was the moment that it kind of came together. And I realized that, you know, I've got a recruitment background. So from a diversity and inclusion perspective, recruitment is really important to me, and the way in which we recruit people into our organisations and retain and engage them. Secondly, I absolutely believe that the leaders in organisations and the leaders of the future really need to be invested in and equipped to manage other people. And, you know, I've been a manager and it's bloody tough, and it can be very lonely and isolating. So I was very passionate about upskilling and equipping them. And of course, the whole diversity and inclusion strand, which I was very authentically experienced, you know, and capable of being able to roll out in terms of learning and development, seemed to come together as a real golden thread. You know, humanity is the golden thread, isn't it? And so that's kind of now what I'm doing. I say kind of, I make that sound like I'm not really, I am doing. So I work with leadership teams and organizations as a whole, helping them embed leadership and inclusion strategies throughout their businesses. That's what I do. That was a very long answer for kind of who I am and what I do, really. But there you go.
It was, it's great, and it gives me lots to work with. And where are you based, and are you based from home?
I'm based from home at the moment. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that most of the world is based from home at the time of this recording. But I'm in Shropshire, so I'm right in the sort of Midlands, which is great. Actually, I've only recently moved to this area in October of last year. I'm a Midlands girl through and through, although I do tend to have twangs of funny accents depending on where I'm traveling to, where I've been. I seem to pick a bit of everything up, but yeah, I'm in the Midlands. And I mean, even before the COVID-19 situation hit and lockdown and all the rest of it, you know, I did some portion of my work working from home. So actually that whole transition wasn't too challenging for me. It's actually been quite enjoyable in many ways. Although I'd rather that we weren't forced to be locked down, you know, that can be, I recognize, quite stressful for a lot of people.
So I'm interested, you talked about joining the PSA as being sort of a trigger, a sort of pivotal moment in your career. Had the sort of diversity conversation, if you like, been something that had been there for you throughout your career, or did they draw that out of you as a story to use to inspire people?
Interesting, interesting. Great question, actually. So I suppose the easy answer about perhaps was I out of the closet, which is perhaps a good place to start, is yes and no. So I'm 47 now, but we won't tell everyone. Oh dear, I just did.
No one's listening, don't worry.
but I came out, as I've just mentioned, as a teenager at I was 15, and I because I think of that initial response from my school friends, and some of the challenges that I faced on the journey and the fear that I went through. Anybody that's listening that's ever either had a had to have one of these kind of conversations, either as the receiver or the the person delivering the message, will know just how scary it can be. And I think I was just, I just didn't want to have to go through that whole, will people treat me differently? Will people treat me differently again? So although those nearest and dearest to me knew, I wasn't actually initially out of the closet in my work, and you know, my early work, as many young sort of 20 somethings do, I was a holiday rep for 4 years, which took me, you know, to a few lovely places around the world, but it was the most personally lonely time for me, because, to be honest, I think it was kind of Straitsville, dare I say. You know, it was interesting because, and I use very much a stereotype in the context of my experience, was the girls were man-eaters and the boys were gay. So I mean, it wasn't quite Straitsville, but it was from a kind of lesbian perspective. It was a very challenging time for me, and it was just easier to say nothing most of the time. And, you know, over the years, there've been a handful of people that I've confided in. I worked in recruitment for 15 years and I didn't actually, come out of the closet officially until I was an established manager in a very successful team, and I just met my now wife, and that was at the end of 2007. So and even now, actually, I mean, it's not my opening line, but then would anybody's opening line be, hi, I'm heterosexual, you know? So
yeah.
So it's just one of those things that I'm now much more open, and you know, blimey, if I can't be true to myself, then what's the point? And I think, you know, perhaps your listeners will recognize that. You know, I think when you whatever it is, when you're in a position where you can live your truth, I don't need to broadcast it into everybody's face, if you like, if it's not appropriate to do so. But if somebody asks me about me, well, that is part of who I am. But I stress it's a part of who I am. It's not my complete identity. And I think, like all human beings, you know, we're multifaceted. But yeah, it's, I think when I joined the PSA, I did decide that, you know, when you give a speech on a stage, obviously depending on to which audience, but, you know, there's a lot of things around thinking about what you want the audience to take away, what do you want them to learn. In fact, very little of the speech is about the speaker.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know, the speaker, a bit like the trainer, perhaps even a bit like the coach, is really the vessel through which the recipient learns and is prompted to take action. And so I really feel that, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, you know, when we leverage the power of humanity in all its forms, we really have the possibility to make magic happen. That doesn't sound too cheesy, you know, because we bring so much value unique to the world. And so my story just became the vessel for that.
Yes. And you know, you use the phrase, you know, speak your truth. I think you know, I think generally there's two types of speakers. There's the speakers that give you the veneer, and there's the people who give you the truth and or their truth, and that that is what makes a really great speaker, I think. I think the others can appear great, but somewhere along the line, the crack comes.
And I think, you know, in many ways, you're right. I think, you know, there are a bit like, you know, coaches, trainers, anybody in the world, but there are speakers that will suit different audiences. And I guess, you know, if it, depending on what that speaker's message is about, you know, I like to think that some speakers speak from the head or speak to the head, and then others speak from the heart to the heart. And what we often find we tend to hold with us longer is the heart, because it touches something within us, doesn't it?
And yes.
So I think that's probably where your comment comes from there, in that, you know, those that really are truly vulnerable up on a stage and open themselves up in order to convey their message seem to touch us much more.
Yes.
It's been my experience too.
Mm-hmm. So we touched on the fact that you're now based from home for much of what you do, the same as you say, you know, many people around the world. Tell us a bit more how that's sort of played out for you, because you did travel a lot, you said before we came on, generally, and you know, your work took you to clients and so on. How have things changed for you now?
Oh gosh, well, I think probably like most people, they've changed massively, but it hasn't all been a negative journey. In fact, the vast majority of it has been very, very positive for me. I feel very, very lucky, actually. First of all, I moved to the wonderful Shropshire countryside in October. So, you know, as I speak to you now, I'm looking out at fields and sheep beyond. So I'm in a wonderful, very, very blessed situation in terms of my lockdown is based in somewhere very pleasant to be. So that's helpful. I think it, from a work perspective, what's been really interesting, of course, you know, like many people, you know, training clients, speaking engagements have had to be cancelled or postponed. And so initially, you know, there's a big shock, isn't there, to the system. But I found, because of the training work that I do, and actually I delivered training on virtual platforms way before, you know, COVID-19. And so many of my clients were saying, look, is there a way that we can make this a virtual session? And in the vast majority of cases, then yes, it is. So I've been able to actually do much more than I'd anticipated work-wise, because those same clients have maybe come to me and said, look, you know, if I've seen it once, I've seen it a million times, you know, how to thrive through lockdown type thing, you know, in a virtual world. So, you know, yeah, I was one of those people. I created some sessions, which I delivered. I delivered to China. I delivered to Australia. I delivered to the States. I delivered to places that actually client budgets probably wouldn't have dictated. They'd have flown me out there to do it. So actually, it presented a very nice opportunity for me to engage internationally, but from the comfort of my own home. And I think one of the biggest challenges that I've always found with working from home, actually, is stopping.
Yes.
it's not starting, it's stopping. And you know, I find that if I'm not careful, I will be sat in my office until just literally, I mean, I've had days where, you know, 7:30, I'm sat in the morning, I'm sat in the office, and but for a couple of breaks, short breaks here and there, you know, I'll still be sat in my office at sort of 7:30, 8:00 at night. And, you know, it's that whole, as you go to get up off your chair, you realize that you've been sat in the same position for far too long. Yeah. And you know, you're getting a bit the wrong side of 40 to not stand up and take a few you know, strolls around the office. I think that's been challenging.
I found that challenging, considering what I do, you know, and I talk about you know, being clear about what you want to do and what you don't want to do and aligning your activity with it and all those other things, you'd think I'd have sort of got this sussed. But what I have realised is that, well, firstly, I don't know how I'm going to fit any of my normal life back into the life I now have, because I don't seem to have any time. But also, I think a lot of my stopping was by going out of the house to do things. So I sing in a number of choirs and, you know, play netball and things like that. And that was my stopping. And because I don't have those things, and even, you know, seeing friends and so on, you know, I've sort of Zoomed with friends and now we meet them in the garden sort of thing. But, you know, there were so few of those things happening that I was filling it with work stuff. And it's like, well, you know, I have got other things I can do in the house. But it seemed like I hadn't realised that most of my downtime, if you like, was actually out of the house doing other things
rather than being
in the house, not working. And so that's been quite challenging, working out how to stop working whilst staying in the house.
Well, that's it. And, you know, I have... generally speaking, got my head around it all. I mean, you know, I'm a dog owner. So, you know, there's you've obviously got to go and take your dog for a walk. So, and of course, as lockdown has eased that bit more, I'm able to go to, I'm surrounded by the wire forest on the doorstep, which is wonderful for dog walking. And I do just love peace and quiet. You can probably tell from where I've chosen to live. I like peace and quiet. So just to go and walk the dog in the woods, I think is very, it's like a mind numbing, but very heart centered activity, isn't it? Just to be in a forest and be with nature. And quite an unusual thing as well is that where we live now, our next door neighbour, closest neighbour, is a farmer, a sheep farmer, and she's reasonably elderly, and her husband, unfortunately, just prior to the lockdown, had to go into a care home, which was the best place for him, to be honest, with his condition. But so myself and my wife go around and we help her out with the sheep. And so most mornings, actually, now, although I've said, you know, sometimes I'm in from 7:30, generally speaking now, I'll go around to hers, help feed the lambs, make sure that the sheep are all right. And there's a couple of lambs. I mean, it's so cute. There's a couple of lambs that are still being bottle fed. They're not yet weaned. So, you know, I mean, it's a tough job, but someone's got to do it. So bottle feed some of the lambs. And I mean, if there's a better way to start your day, I haven't yet found it, because this is just tops the lot, you know, to go around and see the sheep and the lambs in the morning.
So, I think you've topped the guests in terms of things that you do in your spare time. I don't think I've spoken to anyone who's rearing sheep.
You know what? No, I haven't even started yet, because I you can't see this, but when I went to a speakers convention last year, there was a gentleman who's extremely, extremely funny, who basically he's a comedy speaker, talks about putting comedy into his speeches. And he got a few of us up on stage to attempt to play the nose flute. You may be wondering what that is. Well, it is in fact a plastic thing that basically goes over your nose and your mouth. It's not like a mask, but and you blow through your nose and play the flute. Now, so I have oodles of fun if I just need some empty the head time, you know, some get ready before a call or whatever. I can't play it. I'll hang on. Oh, there we are. I managed to move. So that. So this is my nose flute, which I keep in my desk tray, just for no reason other than it makes me laugh and just reminds me of that, you know.
Well, I have two stories of my youth that I'm reminded of by what you've just told me. Firstly, I went to a friend's birthday party when I was about 9, wearing my white bomber jacket. You know, clearly, you know.
On trend,
exactly. until one of the lambs, because she lived on a farm, did a rather nice yellow poo down it.
No.
I don't think we got that out. I think I had to throw it away. I couldn't turn it into a sort of feature. And The second one on the nose flute thing is that I used to be particularly good at playing two recorders from my nose. So one at each nostril.
Fantastic.
And clearly ambidextrous that I could actually do the notes with each hand.
Ambinostrous.
Yes.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, yeah, I'm with you on the sheep poo. I do feel that if I haven't stepped in a fresh sheep poo each morning, then my work is not yet
complete. Yeah, you've wasted the morning, obviously.
Absolutely.
Well, who knew that the podcast was going to take this turn?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, dear. So, getting us back slightly on track, let's talk a bit about how you deliver what you do and how you sort of get things done and make sure that you're getting done what you need to get done. Obviously, Zoom plays a big part in it now.
Absolutely. No more nose flute for now. But yeah, so, you know, I'm not always the, well, I'm not at all the most technical of individual. You know, when I talk about the fact that I deliver training, you know, virtually, internationally and whatever, there should be a caveat to say that it's either generally on Zoom because I can navigate my way around that, or it's via a platform that the client provides that I know how to use, if you like.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly no big tech guru. You know, how do I get things done? Honestly, it's as simple as having a list and putting stuff in the diary. I do love a post-it note. So I do have a tendency some days to be surrounded by said things. But then, of course, as soon as I've done something, I can just scribble it up and off it goes.
Yeah.
I'm an online calendar fiend because... I've got a MacBook and I've got an iPhone and I'm not on commission from Apple, but they are supposed to basically tally up, right? They sync.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've had just one or two very close calls whereby I've looked at my calendar on my MacBook and what I thought I was doing that day, I wasn't, because there's something else that's in the calendar that hasn't synced. So I do have slight kind of, right, I have to check the phone and the calendar, make sure they sync for the day. But you know what? Good old pen and paper does it for me as well. I think it's quite interesting. You know, I told you that my L&D career has kind of instigated this new love of learning. And I'm currently... undertaking a neuroscience course, and it's fascinating. It's popping my head off a little bit, but it's fascinating, and it works very well alongside the NLP work that I did, because anybody that knows will know that NLP is not a science, it's an art, but some of the work that you learn in NLP, there are some connections to neuroscience, and it's really important for me as a professional trainer and speaker to be anything that I talk about in relation to the brain and how the brain works and influences our behavior and such like is actually backed up by the right stuff. And I'd always known that, you know, multitasking was a myth, but you know, during this course, I've realized that, yeah, it really is. And actually what our brain does is, rather than have the capacity to multitask, it just switches its attention. And the more times you switch your attention, actually, the more the impact of that switching has on your long-term memory over a period of time. And that makes me realize, that answers a lot for me, because it makes me realize why I can't remember what I did very often in my childhood, you know, and things like that, other than a few moments. Because I think I've been one of those people that so often I do try and multitask or switch my attention.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, God, it's so much better when, today I've had a great day, because today I've just said, right, all I'm doing today is one piece of work and this conversation with you, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And it's a long piece of work that I was doing, but it was just that. So that just had my complete attention, my whole focus. And it is true that you become much more productive doing that. So I think planning can be hard, and especially over these recent months, You know, there's been so many people when we first went into lockdown, I thought I was going to have a meltdown because, not because of lockdown, but because so many people were trying to steal my time, really. And I think, you know, people almost felt that, oh, well, we're in lockdown now, so we can have a Zoom for an hour. But actually, I was quite busy. So it was quite difficult to keep up because I didn't like saying no to people, you know, that typical kind of want to please. So I didn't like to say no to people and so on. And it was really draining me. This whole Zoom fatigue was like, it's a real thing. It's totally a real thing.
Yeah.
So I do that. With the standards, I've learned to say no a little bit more now for the Zoom meeting, so that's evened out quite nicely. I've learned to focus on as much as possible, you know, one key thing at a time.
So I've got a question there. You said you've worked literally on one thing today aside from this conversation.
Yeah.
How do you make that happen? Because that, you know, is like the sort of pinnacle of of focus and time management and everything else. But most people won't do that, can't do that. They would like to, or they think it's the thing to do, but actually, you know, this thing's beeping here and things that you need to do there, and just that feeling of overwhelm because you've got a big long list that you're not looking at. How have you got yourself into that zen mode so you can just work on that?
I'm not sure I'd quite go so far as zen. I'd say that it's probably been a combination of, if I'm honest, I'd love to have a wonderful answer that was like genius for everyone to take away. But truth be told, I've had a manic few days prior and I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. So I just need to do one thing.
Yeah.
But actually, if I could repeat that, I know, and the days that I do sometimes do it, to be fair. And the days that I do, I think that we have to really think about, do I actually have to have my email on? Do I? And, you know, if it pings, do I have to respond to it? You know, if I have let it on. And if you, I don't know, I think unless you're waiting on something that is particularly important and you know it's going to be not a life or death situation, but you understand where I'm going, you know, a real priority, then do we really have to be drawn away from what we're doing? And you know, I train this stuff, time management, with people, and honestly, my first opening line is there is no magic wand for time management. I think the key is prioritizing, isn't it? And it's recognizing the importance of something over and above something else.
Yeah.
So for me today, I realized that for my own sanity, my own headspace, that piece of work had to be my focus today, because if I was switching out, checking social, doing this, doing that every 5 minutes, then that piece of work would basically drag on and drag on and drag on. And I wanted to get it done. And furthermore, I wanted to get it done well. So, you know, we're of course prone to making more mistakes, you know, when we're switching out and switching back and forth all the time and being distracted by things. So, I think, you know, it's about being able to say, this is more important than that. You know, this piece of work is more important than me checking my emails. This piece of work is more important than me checking my social media or whatever, you know. And and I do try with my social, because I do try and have a presence on social media, mainly with LinkedIn and Facebook, to be honest with you. I probably don't do enough, some people would say, on things like Twitter and Instagram. But what I do is I try and get my posts thought through in advance. I use a fabulous, here's a little one for your listeners. I create a lot of video content. And there are people that say, oh, no, hate video, don't like myself on video. My advice, and very with kindness, get over it. and I say that with kindness because, you know, my thought process on this is people will judge you anyway. So, you know, there'll always be people that like what you have to say, don't like what you have to say, like your hair, think you're fat, think you're lovely, whatever, you know. So there's always going to be people judging you anyway. So I'd rather be visible and and they're not, if that makes sense. And a lot of work and referrals and come from that visibility in my world. Mm-hmm. So I use this great website called Veed. That's VEED.io. So they're, I think that's an Irish website. They're reasonably new to the whole video editing piece. Now, I told you earlier, I'm a bit of a technophobe. So I tend to do the videos either, I either video myself on a Zoom call, if you like.
Yeah.
That's really easy to do. Or sometimes it's just traditionally on the iPhone. So there's no kind of big snazzy camera equipment. But super important for me, and I would hope for everybody, is you know, especially in my D&I space, it's really important that that video is accessible for everybody. So I always subtitle my videos. And there's various different apps and bits and pieces that you can use, but I found Veed to be super, super simple. It just does it all for you, basically. Auto subtitles it. If you really want to be technical, you can add music, you can add emojis and things like that. But I use, what I tend to do is I'll block record. So I'll maybe have a day where I record 3 or 4 short videos, get them onto Veed, subtitle them. And of course, so not only for those deaf and hard of hearing, but also the fact that most people watch them with the sound off. So they are subtitle ready. And then I know that there are some great apps that you can use, like Buffer, Hootsuite and so on, to sort of schedule, but I'm never actually quite as organized in that regard as I'd like to be. So I just tend to post them sort of first thing in the morning if I'm going to. And that's done, and then that's done, and then of course it's resisting the urge to keep going in to see, oh, I wonder if anybody else has liked it. Oh, has anyone commented? And you know, and just doing that a bit later on. So another long-winded answer, Joe, but you know, I don't believe there's a magic bullet. I think it really is about discipline and prioritizing, and it's not always easy. Sometimes I nail it and sometimes I don't. You know, that's the honest truth.
Lovely, thank you. And another question about you've talked about learning and doing lots of learning, and in fact one question I did want to ask you is your I can't remember how you described it, your professional Lego learning. Do you have to learn how to walk on it as well?
Like in the dark whilst finding the way to the loo.
Exactly.
Yeah, quite. So Lego Serious Play is just like amazing. It really is like business stuff through building with Lego. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it basically was something that, of course, Lego is a Danish organisation, and apparently this came about, there's a bit of a story, but Lego Serious Play came about when Lego were really out of fashion some years ago. And they needed to think about ways to become more strategic and, you know, get their business on track, if you like. And apparently a couple of coaches went into Lego and they said, right, if we just, and this all makes sense actually, if we sit and make a list, or we brainstorm on a flip chart, or we create a mood board or whatever, that is two-dimensional learning. But if we build something, actually what that creates within us is three-dimensional learning. So there's just more at play, and the theory is that you can become more creative that way. Mm-hmm. So the theory really behind Lego Serious Play is that you would pose a question. Oh, by the way, they managed to find a new way forward and, you know, catapulted the Lego brand once again. But basically what you would do is you would maybe work with teams that were either looking to solve a problem, or perhaps increase customer engagement. You can use it for a number of things, define their team values, organizational values. And you basically, you can do it in many ways, but fundamentally people build a representation of the solution. And so you wouldn't necessarily say, oh, I've built a person in a sports car because that means everyone's going to get rich. But instead, you can build anything you like. And it would be a case of the facilitator really checking in with that person on their building and saying, maybe this red brick here, what does that represent? And this whole act of them thinking about, oh, I didn't really consider that that meant anything, but now you're asking, maybe it means this. It just, can you tell how it would bring out so much more creativity, actually? And it's fascinating. And there's all sorts of things you can do with it, to be honest. And I just skimmed the surface there. But
yeah.
It's a very interesting and entertaining way of learning, which I think just adds very nicely to a traditional two-dimensional learning methodology.
But without the treading on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So just before we move into the last couple of questions of the interview, you've written a book whilst we've been in lockdown, haven't you? Tell us more about that.
Actually, I have, yeah. But there we are. Thanks for asking. Yeah, do you know, it's it is interesting. I mean, you know, I think we talked about this before we began recording, but you know, that this whole kind of, oh, are you going to sort of learn a new language while you're in lockdown? and actually, so many people are just like, oh my God, if only I had the time. And for much of the lockdown period, I've been one of those people, you know, I just haven't got the time because I'm focusing on things.
Yeah.
But what it has enabled me to do, because I think I'm spending less time on trains, planes, in cars, on motorways and traffic jams, and instead, you know, from the comfort of home, it's got me, it's given me the space to put together something I've been looking to put together for a while. And my work, as you know, is to help create and embed inclusive practices in organisations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd thought for a while about creating a desktop flip book, you know, these kind of, you know, some people have desktop calendars that they're wire bound and they flip over and so on. This, rather than a calendar, this is a book. I've called it The Little Book of Belonging, and it's your weekly guide to inclusive habits. And basically what it is, so it's got a bit of spiel from me at the front, you know, suggesting how people can get the most of it, and that it will challenge their thinking and get them reflecting and hopefully provoke positive action. And then I've changed the way I'm working with D&I, so diversity and inclusion. Lots of organizations focus on things like unconscious bias and becoming aware of our biases and you know, avoiding being biased as much as we can, or perhaps we focus on discrimination awareness training and be really careful not to do the wrong thing. Now, those two things are important, but my belief is that they're actually also often off-putting for people in organizations because they feel guilty about having these biases and they don't want to open up about it.
Mm.
Even though we all have biases to an extent. So what I wanted to do is to create something much more positive around the inclusion space. And so what this book does is it focuses on the behaviours that we demonstrate every day, but from the specific perspective of inclusion. So, for example, if we understand one another at a much deeper level in terms of how we identify, what our values and belief systems are. And I'm doing that with a colleague in an organization, and they are opening up to me about their identity and values as well. That creates a really lovely platform of understanding to enhance that working relationship, to act as a springboard really for other conversations. And so the book asks a question each week, and it might be around what more I can do to educate myself, how I can create safe spaces for people to open up, how I can work harder to be courageous and vulnerable about what I still don't understand about the people around me. So it doesn't necessarily tell you, you must do this, 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 and this, but it says instead, reflect on this in your life and what you could do differently. There's a great question in there about, you know, what if people respond defensively to me, what might I have said or done that caused that? And so rather than if somebody responds defensively, you can do this and do this and do this. Instead, it's asking people to self-reflect, to say, well, could I have done something that actually caused that person's behavior? And that just gets people thinking differently.
Yes.
And you know, just as an aside as well, I've put a very nice little motivational quote on each page as well. So each week you've got a nice quote to inspire and motivate, and then you've got a question for reflection and thought. So yeah, the little book of belonging. Yeah, it is your weekly guide to inclusive habits. So it's designed for 52 weeks of the year, something each week to focus on, which of course will help create new habits.
Sounds lovely. Well done, you.
Thank you. I'm dead chuffed with it, actually. I'm really pleased with it.
Yeah, so yeah.
I hope it'll bring a lot of, a lot of support and help and enlightenment to people.
So last couple of questions. Firstly, what about on those days where it all goes horribly wrong? How do you deal with those?
Well, other than a large gin...
But, yeah,
not in the middle of my day, I hasten to add. But I think there is, at the risk of sounding a bit cheesy, because I don't want to make out that I'm some sort of saint, you know. Yeah, I do get frustrated at times when things go wrong. I think anyone would lie if they said they didn't have a response to these things. But what I do try to remind myself is of a great quote that simply says, "This too will pass." And I think we have to remind ourselves of things like that in life, whether we're going through a troubling or challenging or difficult time, or literally just everything's gone to the wall that day. And we should equally remind ourselves when things are going well. Because I think life is a series of ebbs and flows. And, you know, we can't appreciate that good things exist if we haven't experienced the polar opposite. Because otherwise, life is just life, isn't it? So, you know, life gives us these challenges and, you know, things going wrong that just create that balance for us. So I think that... there are often days that things go wrong, and I get incredibly frustrated at my lack of technical prowess when I want to be much more efficient and effective with things that I think this should be so simple. And I'm one of those people that, you know, it might take one person 2 minutes to do, and it could take me half a day to navigate and get my head around it. So that frustrates the hell out of me. I get frustrated sometimes because, if I'm honest, I'm a little bit of a control freak in terms of I don't really want to outsource too much, even though all the experts tell you to do that, because I just like to know what's going on with things. But then obviously that creates a workload and extra challenges. But I do think, generally speaking, when we're able to give ourselves, first of all, I think giving ourselves permission is really important. Give yourself permission to just have a bit of a crap day, you know. But don't stay there. That's the key, isn't it? It's going, right, okay, this too will pass. Today's been a bit of a crap day, which means that tomorrow is likely to be better. And, you know, I'm a big fan of sleeping on things, as in not on things like a book or a piece of Lego, but I mean sleeping on a problem, sleeping on something that's still hanging in my mind as to what can I do here or what could I do differently there. And literally, as I go into that, you know, that sort of mid space between consciousness and sleep, you know, just let that hang in my mental air. And it's amazing how different things can look the next morning. Sleep's super important. So, you know, if ever I have broken sleep or whatever, it's it has a big influence on my day, I must be honest. I think, you know, sleep is massively important. But and that can set you up or not for a day ahead, which can sometimes set the tone. But, you know, things like that, catastrophe, challenge, problems, things going wrong, they will they will always be temporary. And I think we have choice about, was it Maya Angelou that said, you know, it might have been a million other people as well, but, you know, life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to it. And and that, I think, is a really sound advice. So, yeah, I mean, that's it, really. I don't always succeed. But when I put my mind to it and I focus, I remind myself it's not forever. It's not permanent. You know, I sometimes ask myself, well, what's the worst that can happen? And then I importantly ask, and I do this with groups I work with as well, and what's the best that can happen? So what's the possible good outcome from this challenge? You know, will it get me to work harder, work differently, work smarter, you know, behave differently in some way in the future that will eliminate or minimize this problem recurring? And, you know, I think actually without mistakes, we would learn very little.
Absolutely. So what about those days where you get to live more? And that's where I talk about getting to do more of the things that you want to do and less of the stuff that you don't want to do. What do those days look like for you?
Well, do you know what? I don't know if I'm going to sound a bit sad here, but I love my work. I do love my work. And my work is a big part of me living to the full. And you know, you get these people that say, oh, you know, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't go back to work. I would stay working. I'm not sure I would, truth be told, but I would do something. I would do something because, and I don't mean lounge on a yacht or something, but I mean something to continue spreading the messages that I spread, because they're too important to me. And maybe this goes back almost, Joe, to where we began this conversation about living truth, and the fact that I'm now in a position where I can very authentically live and speak my truth and bring that. I'm in the fortunate position that I can bring that into the work I do and the change I can help create across businesses. I am living my best life, if you like. You know, yes, I think it is all about balance. You know, it doesn't feel like living your best life when you've been sat in your office 12 hours. So I think, you know, combination of the sheep. I love the sheep. I absolutely love the sheep. You know, the sheep, walking the dog, spending time with my wife, you know, some real quality time. And sometimes it's just, there's a combination of that quality conversation and the just chilling out on the sofa and watching some drivel on the TV. That's really great too, with a gin and tonic, of course. And so those are the days that I think are the best days for me is when I felt energized from everything I've done that day. You know, the things that we all have to do things, especially when you're self-employed, we have to do things that drain us, sap our energy, but we have to do them. Those are the days that they're a bit sort of the days, but when I'm doing things that energize me, so maybe I'm creating material, maybe I'm delivering material, that part of my work is part of my best day. To be honest with you, so it's a whole multitude of things. And it's so interesting because, like a lot of people, you know, I generally holiday quite a lot. And, you know, I told you about my holiday repping days back in my 20s. And I've always loved to travel and, you know, for work and for pleasure. And it's so interesting because with the house move in October, we hadn't booked a holiday. And I'm the one that goes, oh God, we haven't got a holiday booked for 6 months. Like, we need to book something now, because I like to have that sort of something to look forward to, something to look forward to. And we hadn't got that with the house move, and I'm absolutely okay with it. And of course, you know, the world situation has meant it's been a bit challenging when it's come to travel and so on. But I'm absolutely okay at this moment in time with not having a holiday booked at this moment in time, because you know, I do feel very, very lucky, very, very blessed with my life, and so I've no real desire to do that. I can have so much pleasure at home and at work. So I just feel very, very lucky.
Yeah. You've painted a great picture there, especially with the sheep.
absolutely.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jackie. It's been great talking to you today. Tell people how they can get in touch with you and find out more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my website is jackiehandy.com. So that's where you'll find me. On social media, so I'm under, again, Jackie Handy on YouTube. So I've got some videos of observation. I've got some of my more official speaking engagements on there, which you'll also find on the website. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, you'll find me as Jackie Handy, F-I-R-P. That's F for Freddie, I-R-P for Peter. And that's just because it's a recruitment institute that I'm part of. But you'll find me. And I am on Insta and I am on Twitter, but honestly, I don't do a whole lot on there. And I will say one group that I run, which is called The Power of I, on a Facebook group. And The Power of I is basically a group where people can come in and ask and contribute to any of those awkward conversations, if you like, that we are sometimes frightened to have around inclusion. It's designed as a real safe space opportunity for people to put in their thoughts and comments and questions about all things diversity and inclusion. So it's called The Power of I. And people are welcome to come in and join that too.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Jackie. Really enjoyed myself today. Thanks.
Likewise. Thank you, Jo.
All this information is available in the show notes. If you go to powertolivemore.com/173, then you'll find them there. And this week, again, it's a short one. I'm actually supposed to be on holiday and people keep telling me to stop working. But obviously, I have a weekly podcast and I can't not record my outro. So we're camping in a field in Kent, myself, little Dodsey and her friend. And it's been really good, actually, apart from yesterday was really, really windy to the point where we had to pop across the field and peg down a random tent. The people had gone out and we could see pegs flying and everything. So we thought we'd better go and rescue the tent for them. But other than that, it's been really lovely and warm and relaxing. And we're staying on an ice cream farm, which has had one of my colleagues laughing, imagining rows of cornettos planted in the fields. It's not quite like that, but the girls are having ice cream every day, so that's a bonus. At this week's Counterpoint Networking, we talked about using webinars for marketing, and we talked about how they are a really good way of people getting to know you personally, because they can hear you and often see you teaching whatever it is you're teaching them, and you can make offers as part of the webinar. So it's about online learning, giving people valuable content, but also you can use it as an opportunity to do a pitch about the product or the services that you offer. And so we were talking about how people can do that and the sorts of things that you need to think about in terms of putting those together. So I don't know if you use webinars for your own marketing, but if you don't, it might be something to consider. As I said, that was going to be short and sweet on the basis that I need to at least pretend I'm not working. So next week's Counterpoint Networking is not happening because it's a bank holiday in the UK. So that's the 31st of August. And so we'll be back on the 7th of September, at which time we'll be talking about automation. If you're interested in coming along to that one, then go to counterpointnetworking.co.uk and look under events and you'll be able to register for that particular event. As ever, the show notes are at powertolivemore.com/173, and we look forward to speaking to you next week.
Use your power to live more.